This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Welcome to WrestleSpective. I'm your host, Jason Mann, and my guest today for the very first time is Lance Garrison. Lance, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jason. It's a pleasure to be here. Big fan for a long time. It's great to be on your 200th episode.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, that's right. It is a 200th episode, isn't it? So,
yeah.
Hard to believe that we've been alive and kicking for so long, but there are... we have done this 200th show, and we have some special stuff to save toward the end, which hopefully people will be excited about. But I am excited to talk about our next match, which is Brock Lesnar versus John Cena at Extreme Rules 2012, and what a match, and what a show. And you picked this one out, so tell me what made this special in your mind, besides the obvious it was a kick-ass match?
I guess that is point A number one, was that it was a kick-ass match. But besides that, I was in the house for this one. I make it to the occasional Chicago area wrestling show. I live in central Illinois now. And, I mean, there was just such a magic energy in the crowd that night. To the point where John Cena had real sympathy with a Chicago crowd, which is not something you would ever expect, but it was an exceptional match that, you know, generated a special reaction for him.
Yeah, and pretty unique to WWE. That's just not a... I can only think of maybe one match that comes even close to the level of... brutality that this match does. It's Vader and Ken Shamrock at Cold Day in Hell, May 1997 pay-per-view, In Your House pay-per-view. But even that, which is, you know, kind of a great, you know, brutal ass-kicking, a little bit kind of back and forth, I don't think really compares to how Brock is just laying into Cena, and as far as the storytelling goes, of Cena just being completely out of it and completely looking like he's able to, he's going to, there's no chance at all against Lesnar, and then to be able to come back, but like in a much more natural, believable way than a lot of times Cena's criticized for, to make it competitive and to be able to pull it out, is really just great storytelling. And the fact that they were able to hook the crowd in a crowd that you know, on the very extreme end of anti-Cena. I mean, obviously Chicago is the place that booed him out of the building at WrestleMania 22 against Triple H, and also, of course, the, you know, famously against CM Punk a year before at Money in the Bank. So with that history in mind, for this to be that reaction and for this to go down the way it did is pretty special.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with everything you said. Yeah, this match, I found myself in rewatching it. There's certain elements of it that are almost driven like a good horror movie, where Lesnar is like the stalking masked serial killer or something, and Cena is the defenseless summer camper. I mean, it's so brutal, and Cena is just so overmatched. You feel like he's barely staying alive. It's pretty special.
Yeah, that's a nice analogy. I like that very, very much. So. And, you know, it's worth noting that this show is, I mean, not only does it have just an exceptional main event, but there are really, like, several blowaway matches. I mean, maybe just as good, maybe arguably better, is the 2 out of 3 falls match with Sheamus and Daniel Bryan for the world title. There's an excellent street fight, CM Punk and Chris Jericho, and also Randy Orton against Kane, Falls Count Anywhere match, surprisingly good match that followed their surprisingly good match at WrestleMania that year. So, you know, that's if you're talking about the 4 best matches on a wrestling show, it's hard to match those 4.
Yeah, and there was even like smaller moments, like Cody Rhodes versus The Big Show was a short match, but it had a very clever finish with you know, foreshadowing the finish with Rhodes doing an acrobatic move off of the table, and then later basically tricking The Big Show into stepping through a table that had been placed on the outside of the ring. It was just a very cool undercard match. Then you had Layla's return, which was about as good as a Divas match gets for reaction. So top to bottom, just an amazing crowd, amazing match.
Yeah, and the crowd had already, you know, seen a lot and was invested in a lot, was excited about. So they were definitely, you know, at this point had already expended a lot of energy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we touched a little bit on Cena winning the crowd over to an extent. And, you know, that definitely might not have been the case if that had been the first match of the night. But the fact is that the crowd had expended so much energy rooting on these other great matches, and especially, you know, the predictable huge Chicago pop for CM Punk. By the time Cena started, there was fatigue among the audience, and they didn't have their usual will to hate on Cena all night.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. So, so Brock Lesnar had returned on the Raw after the previous pay-per-view, which was WrestleMania. That was WrestleMania 28, where Cena had, of course, lost to The Rock. And you know, what could maybe be deemed as a surprise, just given that Cena was the younger, not really necessarily realizing that if The Rock was going to be doing more matches, and even though that was in Miami. So I certainly, from the point of view of the character, you know, it had been John Cena for a year promising victory against The Rock, and feeling like he was the guy who had been there, and he was the guy who had to kind of prove that his generation was better than The Rock's generation, and, you know, and so forth. So he had lost. So there's kind of this feeling that, like, okay, what's going on with Cena? You know, he's lost a little bit. They kind of support that by also having him lose to Tenzai on Raw, who had recently debuted as a character. And of course, the initial, even before that, the initial attack by Brock Lesnar the night after Raw, with Cena in the middle of the ring and then Brock interrupting him, Cena extending his hand, and then Brock immediately lifting him up, hitting him with an F5, and then kicking his green hat. And then which is just like a wonderful, like, one of the great Raw debuts or re-debuts or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, yeah. That was a very exciting moment, like, yeah, even just watching on the couch at home. It was a jump-out-of-your-seat kind of moment.
Absolutely. And then, you know, they did some really good stuff as well with they did a big pull-apart with Lesnar bloodying Cena's mouth. They did a really good sit-down interview with Lesnar, where Lesnar came off as came off very well, and came off as just like this brash, confident guy who, you know, wanted to legitimize WWE and thought Cena was a cartoon, and, you know, thought he was a real bad, you know, a real badass, a real, you know, real fighter kind of thing. So just, you know, kind of playing off the tensions of, you know, MMA versus WWE a little bit, UFC versus WWE, and just promoting himself and doing it very well. Like, it's weird because Lesnar is sometimes so bad at promos. In fact, you know, basically they have Paul Heyman there to do them now. But sometimes he's really good and really personable. And obviously when he was in UFC, I don't know how big of a UFC fan you are, but You probably, you know, at least familiar with, you know, he was, you know, really good at just being himself and really just being a guy who, you know, you inspired hatred of him just because of, you know, how brash and confident he was. But in the wrestling context, it's very much a mixed bag for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's funny because when he transitioned to that UFC world, you know, he was just so over the top. But, you know, among other wrestlers, he's not seen as somebody who's an exceptional promo or anything. But, yeah. You know, you put him into a different setting and it's a whole other story.
Go ahead.
Oh, I agree with you about some of Lesnar's nice touches and, you know, his promo work and stuff. Like, it's funny because on the technical merits of, like, giving a good wrestling promo, he may not be much. But in all that lead-up stuff, he was really good at selling you on the idea that he was just an angry jughead who liked to hurt people.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's funny. I've been sort of watching a little bit of, like, some of his 2003 heel stuff, just, you know, here and there. And he's also good there, you know. It's weird because Lesnar kind of has this reputation as being just a really bad talker, and you know, but sometimes he's great. And you know, again, I remember I'm pretty sure it was at the Go Home show where they had Brock just give this what seemed like interminable promo. I think it was during a contract signing, and it just seemed like it went on forever. I just remember like being on Twitter and just like thinking like, oh my God, this is like the worst thing I've ever heard. Now that may have been an in the moment overreaction, but it was still like, you know, like I feel like they're almost killing this. And that, again, that's another probably overreaction in the moment, but I just remember like the build being pretty much like so excellent right before then, and then that happening, and feeling like ugh. And obviously whatever momentum they may have lost from that, and that just may be something I'm imagining in my mind. It was not a problem once they started the match.
Oh yeah, that was long forgotten by the time the match got going. Yeah. Interesting story about that segment. If Paul Heyman is to be believed on the last Steve Austin podcast, apparently the emergency call went into Heyman to get him back immediately following that promo that night on Raw.
So it wasn't just me. So
no, it was seen as a disaster.
Yeah, apparently. Okay. I'm glad. I mean, not that I need people to agree with me to you know, validate my opinions, but I'll take it this time.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of the Edge pep talk?
I don't know. I can't really remember feeling that strongly about it one way or another. And maybe it's just in retrospect, but I feel like the legend coming back for the pep talk has is a well they've gone to a few too, times too many at this point.
Yeah.
Remember Mick Foley also coming back to pep talk CM Punk, or no, not exact, more of a threatening pep talk in that case. But
sure, they had Piper do it like on the old school Raw, which was really good. And Foley did it also for Edge, like before the Undertaker Hell in the Cell at SummerSlam 2008. If I'm remembering that correctly.
Yeah, I believe you're right.
Yeah. So, I feel like it's been well done enough that, and there may be times where it happened that I don't remember. So I don't remember it being as played out as you say, but I mean, that's certainly possible. And obviously, you know, everyone's mileage is different on these things. I'm, for example, really sick of people being, speared through barricades at this point.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm with you on that one,
But yeah, I don't know. I liked it pretty well. Maybe I liked it a little more on paper than it actually in practice. But I still think, like, when done well, that's a nifty trick to go to. But I do agree that, like, there's definitely if they haven't reached the point of going to the well too often for that, there's certainly a danger of doing that.
Yeah. Although I mean I don't remember it perfectly well, but I will say the clips they mixed into the promo package material during the pay-per-view, Edge seemed pretty intense, and I think did a pretty good job of getting the threat of Lesnar across.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish he and Lesnar had sort of had a feud to, like, you know, make him like a really, like, Undertaker would have been, you know, perfect in that role, since he had that, you know, long feud with Lesnar. Or, I mean, you know, somebody who is kind of remembered for having a feud with Lesnar might have even been even better than that. But although obviously Edge being one of Cena's great rivals, you know, maybe makes up for that. I don't know. But, yeah, it's hard because Lesnar wasn't really around enough to have, like, you know, I guess Undertaker was probably his biggest rival of that first run. Can you think of anybody else that, like, stands out as, like, a guy he... Well, a Big Show, I guess. That would have been the other one that where they had a lot of matches and had kind of a big rival. I mean, a lot of his matches were kind of, you know, one-off almost.
Yeah, it's funny now that you mention it. I mean, so many of Lesnar's feuds from that first run, they're either unavailable or dead in the case of Eddie Guerrero.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Kurt Angle, Eddie Guerrero, both unavailable.
Oh, yeah, Kurt Angle, obviously. Yeah, The Rock, he had one match with The Rock, but that obviously wouldn't have fit that story.
Jeff Hardy harkening back to his first ever match, not available, of course.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. So, yeah, I guess Edge probably was the best guy in that situation. So Lesnar is out in his, well, what have become his, you know, usual gear of MMA gloves, his Jimmy John shorts, but wearing, you know, a similar outfit to what he wore when he fought in the UFC. Cena is wearing the chain and padlock, as Michael Cole describes him, going back to his roots. By the way, our commentary team is Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler, and Booker T. And there's a really cute close-up as Cena is entering, where with the sign that says "Cena is still our hero," and there's a, you know, parents and then two little kids all decked out in green Cena shirts and then wearing those green signs. And I think the kids might be wearing like bandanas or hats or something. You know, it's just a really, like, you know, they may have planned that. Certainly, I very much suspect that that could be a plant, but that's a very effective one. Or even if it's not, you know, if they just took advantage of it, even better. But either way, that's definitely a nice way to kind of convey, you know, that audience for Cena. You know, there's definitely the stereotype that Cena, like, appeals to kids and families, particularly women, which, you know, I think maybe less true now than it was then, even if it is completely true. I mean, yeah, you can definitely say that the audience skews that way, but I've seen, you know, adult men wearing Cena shirts too. I mean, you know, it's not quite as simple as, you know, Cena doesn't appeal to the smart fans and appeals to other people, because there's also a big divide, frankly, you know, among smart fans about how good Cena is, and, you know, and so on and so forth. And I guess I should ask you, what do you generally think of Cena as a performer?
You know, I'll be honest, I had the period where I was on the Cena hater wagon, like so many other people are, but that was before really evaluating his body of work. And, you know, when you get down to it, I think, you know, he's as good a big match wrestler as the WWE has ever had. I mean, the cream of the crop of his good matches would stand up to almost anybody I could think of. I mean, when you talk about this match or Money in the Bank or versus Bryan at SummerSlam, I mean, just those ones within the last few years have been just, you know, top shelf matches. So, you know, these days I'm pretty sympathetic to Cena, although I've come to reckon with the fact that his character will never really appeal to me, and that his tendency to win and be booked for some of the wrong reasons as a winner will also not always jive with me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I guess, like Cena's strengths and flaws are pretty easy to parse out at this point. Like, but I think that overall, in the scheme of things, like, I think his good parts outweigh his bad parts, particularly when it comes to, particularly when it comes to performances in the ring, and you know, I mean, he just has way too many great matches to be not be thought of as a great wrestler. I mean, you know, he can be inconsistent sometimes, and you know, he's had his stinkers too. But I think for the most part, you know, he's a pretty great performer. You know, and I agree that like you know, I'm not really interested necessarily in him being, you know, focused on the guy at this point. But it's kind of like, well, that's, you know, he's still the most popular guy they have. So that's why he's the guy, you know, just for people who, you know, who are obsessed fans like me and you, you know, who, you know, watch a lot and, you know, followed for a long time and, you know, so on and so forth. You know, we're kind of done with him. But if you're not as absorbed with it, if you're not necessarily watching every week, if you're not that invested, if you look at it more as like you look at it more like a sports show, you know, even if you know it's not, you know, even if you know it's worked, you still kind of take a look at it that way. He's just, you know, the best that there is that they have, so it makes sense that he, you know, has that many titles and always wins and so on and so forth. You know, he's your Michael Jordan or what have you of WWE. So
yeah, I mean, The thing that bugs a lot of people is his just ridiculous continued dominance over years and years and years. But ultimately, that's not really a fault of his. It's not a fault of his that the WWE has supreme confidence in him. And it's not his place to say that he should, you know, not be the top guy anymore. I mean, of course, you know, what person would, you know, ask to be demoted at their own job? It's really not a reasonable knock on him that the WWE continues to put faith in him.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and there's nowhere else for him to go, really. You know, realistically, there's no other place he can work and have the advantages that he has. And you know, yeah, I mean, his problem is that he's been too successful for too long. You know, and that's, you know, it's hard to criticize that, I guess. So Brock Lesnar and John Cena are in the ring, and
Jason?
Yes.
Before we get going with the body of the match, I wanted to say there was a lot of nice table setting during the entrance, as you point out. Lesnar coming out in the MMA style trunks, and Cena having the chain with him, I thought was a nice throwback touch. But yeah. Between the trunks that Lesnar's wearing and the cutting to the crowd with the "You're still our hero, Cena," I thought there was a nice a bit of table setting for the underlying subtext of this match, which I think is pro wrestling versus UFC, mm-hmm. with pro wrestling being kind of the old stalwart "You're still our hero," and UFC being this new unstoppable monster that's coming to take the block away from them.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is an unspoken but important element, I think, to this match. And, you know, also Lesnar is, you know, this traitor who ran out on the company 8 years earlier for, you know, Glorious Patrick, for other glory. And Cena is the guy who picked up the ball and became the franchise. And, you know, that would be WWE's version of the event, certainly. So, you know, this guy wants to come back and suddenly be dominant again, be this great, you know, guy again. And, you know, and it's like, well, you know, we don't need you, buddy, or, you know, kind of thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Although, you know, they'll take the attention that he gets, I guess, but you know, so immediately Lesnar takes Cena down, and just with a series of hard forearms and elbows to the forehead, Cena immediately is cut and bleeding after kind of like three repeated elbows to the to his forehead. Very much, you know, done in the manner of a UFC fight. There's a hard clothesline by Lesnar. Lesnar gets up. He gets Lesnar in a waist lock, tries to take him down, gets a front face lock, but Lesnar takes him down again immediately and then pounds on him again. And that's when he gets that series of three elbows that causes the cut. Charles Robinson, he puts on rubber gloves, he sends Lesnar off, and this is kind of during the period for a couple years where they would stop any match for blood. They've kind of backed off this since. There have been definitely been instances where there has been blood and they haven't really gone into it. I think if they still probably had a major amount of blood, they probably would. There may be instances in the past couple of years where they have done it, but it definitely seems like they don't always do it anymore.
Yeah, that policy definitely seems to be in some kind of flux, although, you know, good luck parsing out what their real standards are on it anymore.
Sure. I mean, I kind of get both sides of it where, you know, blood has been a part of pro wrestling for so long. Like, let it be if you're not trying to, you know, I mean, if you're not, like, trying to make the guy bleed, if you're not, you know, blading, then just let it go. But at the same time, I get, like, they don't want blood in their product. And, oh, I said product. Product's like one of my hated words when describing wrestling, but I just used it. I am the enemy. I was sad. No.
Got two in character with the corporate outlook.
Right. They don't want it on their shows. They don't want it as part of the thing, and they want to, you know, so, and I get so from a health and safety issue of wanting to avoid blood as well, but it does obviously interrupt a important thing. Although here it works, I think, because you have the you just like this is giving Cena a respite to sort of like survive this thing, because otherwise he would have no way of surviving. And but it doesn't really make him look. I mean, I guess it makes him look weak in a sense, but it doesn't like it's not like you feel like, oh my God, WWE is like in it for Cena and, you know, he's getting this break. You just feel like, oh my God, looks like Cena has just been destroyed. I hope he's okay, you know? Because, you know, whether it's Cena selling or a combination of just like Lesnar's viciousness and Cena is really, really hurt, or somewhere in the middle of that, it's just done really, really well.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I've had problems with the blood stoppage screwing up the pacing of matches in the past. But in this case, I think it actually enhances things, as you said. If it had been like a smaller cut or like a more, you know, barely noticeable blade job, it would have been one thing. But like Cena is really bloodied on the side of his head. I mean, I don't know if it was hard way or not, but it certainly looks like a pretty legitimate injury.
I mean, I'm almost certain it had to have been hard way. I mean, I guess it, in theory he could have bladed after it, and but that would have been pretty tricky to pull off.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure too.
Yeah. So Cena is attended for a little bit. He looks out of it. We get a bunch of replays of the elbows that caused the cut, leading to a debate among the announcers about which elbow actually caused the cut. They sort of all agree that it was the third one, I believe. That is the consensus. You know, it's interesting what having this match, the way they're calling this match, because I don't know how big of MMA, I know Booker's a pretty big MMA fan. I recall remembering that from, you know, I don't know how I recall remembering that, but I'm almost certain that's the case. I don't really know about Lawler and Cole. But they do a nice job of, you know, of calling it in a way where, like, I don't think, like, a MMA fan watching this would feel, like, embarrassed by it, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like they properly call Lesnar's offense and the way that Lesnar fights. I know that, like, some of the submissions later, like, Cena lasts way too long for that to be a realistic thing, but I think basically otherwise, this is a pretty good WWE simulation of a UFC fight, up until the end, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're right there, and it certainly helps that, you know, Lesnar is not some Brazilian jiu-jitsu, put you in a pretzel lock kind of UFC fighter.
Right, yeah, he's bare bones, I guess, and when it comes to his sophistication of, you know, knowing the holds and knowing the submissions and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty basic to remember, you know, Kimura, ground and pound.
Yeah.
A few other things Lesnar does in this match. So,
That's
they
fair.
Do good in remembering those things.
Though. Yeah, yeah, or just may I don't know, giving it a different feel. I guess I don't know if there's like a specific instance I can describe how they're doing it, but I feel like the commentary does a nice job of conveying like the uniqueness and specialness of the match. Or at least they certainly don't hinder it, you know, which is sometimes all you can ask from a WWE commentary team.
Yeah, sad to say, in modern days.
Yeah. Yeah. Eventually Cena pops up, he runs toward Lesnar, but Lesnar just jumps on top of him, pounds him down repeatedly, and then in just like a really awesome move, you know, they're kind of into the ropes. Lesnar then just kicks Cena under the apron and out of the ring, or under the ropes, onto the apron and out of the ring, just like in a, completely like, you don't belong in my ring, son, get out of here. And it's just like amazing to just an amazing naturally like you know, dickish thing from Lesnar, and it's great.
Oh yeah, Lesnar has just so many great little moments of being a complete dickish heel in this match. And you know, disposing of John Cena like he's a human trash bag and just kicking him out is probably the first instance of it. But yeah, it's just great.
Yeah, and the doctor works on the cut again. Eventually, Cena comes back in. Lesnar charges into an elbow and nearly is able to. Cena's nearly able to pick him up for the attitude adjustment, but Lesnar slips out, hits him with two German suplexes. Lesnar then stalks from behind, nails Cena, but Cena's able to hit out with a series of elbows. Then we end up crashing into Charles Robinson, who gets knocked out of the ring. And then Brock just repeatedly nails Cena with some hard punches right into the eye where he's been cut. More blood comes out, and then Brock licks the blood on his glove, which, you know, interesting thing to do. Cena, but effective in just like he's kind of known for that because he did the smearing of the blood. When he beat Hulk Hogan on his chest, like that's kind of been a signature Brock thing to do, to be not so hygienic when it comes to blood. Cena then, you know, just really struggling to lift himself on the ropes. You can see him grab after his chain. So that's when they start to plant the seed of, oh, okay, the chain's going to be low. I guess it's Chekhov's chain, you know, so to speak. But he doesn't get it at that point. Lesnar then nails Cena with some hard shoulder blocks. Then he grabs the Kimura armbar, and Cena screams. There's no ref, even though Cena is in the ropes. But this is an Extreme Rules match, so I guess that wouldn't really necessarily matter anyway. Which, actually, I'm kind of confused as to why they bothered with the ref bump, because it... didn't really necessarily come into play at all. I guess a little bit later, but I feel like they could have done it later to the same effect. But, you know, for whatever reason, they decided they needed it at that point.
Yeah, it's really not clear why they did that. I don't know, maybe they're trying to sell the careening insanity of the match going on in the ring. But
yeah, it doesn't hurt it. I mean, although it's a little weird because we spent a lot of time without a ref. And then Charles Robinson gets knocked out again later on. And then when there's a cover, another ref just, like, comes in very quickly, you know?
Then Brock just hilariously smashes that ref after the pin attempt.
Yeah, exactly. So, but what can you do? Minor flaw in, you know, otherwise pretty much flawless match. So Brock tosses Cena out again, and then Brock does his little alternating on 2 feet dance that he does in the in the ring sometimes. Then Brock follows him out. We get a armbar outside the ring, and then Cena is tossed very hard into the barricade. Lesnar grabs Cena's chain, which is hanging on the post inside the ring. He teases using it, but he drops it on the mat. nails some hard knee to the ribs. I think he's nailed several hard knees to the ribs at this point. So the kind of his three basic places where he has been trying to hurt Cena are, of course, the cut above the eye, his ribs, and his arm. And Cena appears to be hurting in all three places.
Oh, yeah. And all of Brock's offense just looks so credible and devastating. Even just simple body punches look great coming from Brock.
Yeah, there does not appear to be any, letting up in there or any, he appears to be hitting Cena as hard as he can. I mean, I'm not saying he's literally hitting him as hard as he can, but there's no appearance of anything different than that.
Yeah, it's really pretty flawless work.
Yeah, and some of that maybe because he's really hurting Cena, but yeah, nonetheless, he is, it looks amazing. It's like a Vader match, some of the great Vader performances where wow, this is amazing. It's like, wow, he's really hurting him badly.
Oh yeah, yes. That's what's going on here.
Exactly. Honestly, this kind of now that I think about it, this sort of reminds me a little bit. Have you ever seen the Vader Sting strap match from I believe Super Bowl III in 93?
Yeah.
This, I mean, obviously there's no strap involved in this match, but it's just as far as the amazing one-sided beating and the babyface kind of coming back for some flashes and just looking physically overmatched and exhausted. That's a pretty decent comparison to this. And by the end, you just see the strap welts on Sting's back and just, how much he is, how much they both are physically exhausted, but particularly Sting. I feel like this is a similar type thing in just the extreme physical intensity.
Yeah. You could also look to something Vader versus Cactus Jack. Either way, I think, Vader's just a really good comp for Brock Lesnar here.
Yeah, I agreed. Yeah, I think he's the closest thing that we've had since then. Honestly, I mean, just because of now, obviously, Lesnar's not the same athlete he was 10 years ago when he, during his first run, but was, although he can still do some things, but just, Lesnar's ability to jump and to, Vader was an incredible athlete for his size, but Lesnar's even just another level or two above that, I probably the best athlete there's ever been in professional wrestling that that I've seen anyway. Certainly in WWE in the last, 30 years, I'm pretty confident about that.
Yeah, I'm sure Jim Ross would tell you some old Okie wrestler who,
Danny Hodge or something. But
yeah, but as far as I've ever seen, Lesnar's just a unreal athletic specimen, and you always kind of knew it, even during the first run. It really wasn't surprising when he went to UFC and did well there, or when he almost made the Vikings team, having never really played football before.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he's just blessed with amazing gifts. To be fair, and I think we'll talk about this a little bit in the Twitter questions, but he also he works hard. he's. He may not necessarily have love for professional wrestling or whatever, but every time he's in there, he almost every time he gives a good performance, and almost every time he seems to be working very hard. So and he doesn't necessarily have to, to a certain extent. I mean, because he's going to probably draw fans either way. I mean, maybe eventually that would stop if people were kind of clued in that Lesnar wasn't going to give you good performance, but he's been doing it for long enough now that at least maybe he doesn't love it, but he certainly takes pride in it,
Yeah, I think, if not love, he certainly has a sense of professionalism. At this point in his career, he could have easily coasted on the drawing value of his name, but I think he's pretty much brought it in all the matches he's had coming back to the WWE.
Exactly, yeah. So, Cena, then he sort of drapes the chain around Cena's ankles, then clotheslines him down. And then there's this great visual where Lesnar drapes Cena onto the post outside the ring. So sort of like the Tree of Woe, but Cena, instead of being in the ring, is out of the ring. And then Lesnar just punches his face and slams down his arm onto the apron. You see more blood coming from Cena's head. Lesnar then looks over at the ref. And Cena sort of wakes up. He's able to get out. And he wakes up with a few punches. But then Lesnar immediately tosses him into the steps. And then you get this great visual of Lesnar going around to the apron. He lifts up Charles Robinson by his pants with one arm, and then with both arms tosses him in the ring. But just like, and you know, Charles Robinson's obviously not a huge man, but he's still a you know, man-sized person. You know, he's still at least 160 pounds probably, and Lesnar just picks him up. Just, you know, I'm sure Robinson had to give him a little cooperation, but that's just still like, wow, you know.
I mean, yeah, he really picks him up like you might pick up a flailing child or something.
Right, exactly. It's incredible. Yeah. So Cena crawls in holding on to the chain, but Lesnar steps on his arm. You almost get the FU from Cena, but Lesnar then nails him with the F5, which, as Charles Robinson got up and has recovered, he's nailed by it, so he's out again. However, a second ref comes in fairly quickly and only counts to two. So you kind of get the excuse that, you know, Lesnar had him covered for more than three, but the second ref was a bit late, and, you know, so we don't get the pinfall there. So Lesnar, as has now become his WWE trademark, brings steps into the ring. He steps on them as they are a platform, as he is like celebrating an Olympic gold medal, and sort of taunts the crowd. Cena gathers himself in the corner and does the "you can't see me" hand wave over his face to indicate that he's still alive and he's still in it. Lesnar locks in the Kimura lock. And I believe he has him draped onto the steps. Cena won't tap despite the extreme pain. Now, I forgot to mention, you mentioned it before, but after the ref only counted two, then Lesnar beat him up. So both refs are out of it. And we do see other officials come out, but I guess they are attending to both of the referees because there's no referee in the ring while Cena is, you know, threatening to tap. Cena is able to lift up Lesnar and spine buster him onto the steps, which is, you know, a nice escape and a nice showcase of Cena's strength as well. And then Cena goes to the top and he's looking for his, you know, his top rope leg drop. I guess going to kind of go with, like, sort of try to do like a Famouser, only with Lesnar's face on the steps. But he misses it entirely. It looks like he kind of landed badly on it, because he quickly goes out of the ring and, you know, appears to grab his leg as if he's, you know, seriously injures himself. At this point, Lesnar sort of shakes off. He's dazed. He takes a while to look for Cena. And then he stands on the steps in the middle of the ring, finally spots Cena on the floor, daring him to come in. As Cena does climb up to the apron, Lesnar gets a running start, jumps off the steps, but he ends up straddling the ropes and flipping over onto his head on the apron, and looking like he hurt his knee, but then he sort of immediately jumps up and laughs it off. So I'm not entirely sure what Lesnar was actually going for there, but I guess it just sort of adds to the crazy nature of this match, even if, of course, that does not fit like within the, you know, realm of Lesnar sticking to his MMA background.
Oh, yeah. I think it might have been like a flying knee or something. It really wasn't clear, but
yeah,
that tumble is like, it's just insanely scary.
Yes.
And everybody in the house was stunned. You know, we thought, you know, Brock Lesnar could just be dead or something, because,
right.
I mean, he just fell with such violence.
Yeah.
And also, I really like that little moment just beforehand. I'm pretty sure it's unintentional, but where Brock can't see, literally can't see Cena.
Right.
And kind of stalks around and then eventually climbs on the stairs and sees him. That was one of the moments that really got in my head, the idea of this match being like a horror movie, because, you know, that's the kind of scene you get in a horror movie where, you know, the person's hiding and the killer's stalking around looking for them and then spots them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, meanwhile, we see that Cena is on the floor with the chain. Lesnar is, he basically tries to do the same sort of run and attack against Cena, but Cena is able to clobber him in the head with the chain. And Lesnar stumbles to the mat. He is bleeding. Meanwhile, Cena sort of shakes his entire body, including his mouth, and shivers and sort of powers up a little bit, but looking like he's just kind of, I don't know. How would you describe that? What he's doing right before he, goes into his comeback?
I don't know.
I don't know if you noticed that moment, but he's just sort of like, he's like, almost like he's convulsing, you know, like he's just like, I don't know. But, he ends up, stalking Lesnar as Lesnar struggles to get up. He, hits Lesnar with the attitude adjustment onto the steps, and Lesnar is pinned with his shoulders on the steps. So, Cena does at all, against all odds, is able to beat the mighty UFC star. Pro wrestling wins, hooray! And
yeah.
As you said, Chicago, you know, the Chicago crowd cheers Cena. It's pretty much into Cena as the babyface the whole time. I don't remember him being booed at all during, I mean, he was booed during his introduction, but like during the actual match when it started, I don't remember any kind. I think there may have been,
there was some Let's Go Cena sucks.
Yeah, there were a couple.
They were pretty lifeless compared to what they usually get.
Yeah, there were maybe a handful of chance that you would get from a crowd, you know, from a knowing crowd, from a smart crowd, for lack of a better term. But basically, the reaction to this match, you know, 80% of them anyway, probably were like the reaction that you would get from like a 1989 wrestling crowd, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, speaking personally, I was totally ready to just cheer Brock all night, because I was excited to see Brock. And, you know, I really enjoyed this kind of the menace that he brought to the table.
Mm-hmm.
But as the match went on, it just became really impossible to cheer for Brock, because Cena is just so good here at generating sympathy, and you really get behind the story that the match is telling and not the story you want to impose on it, which is how good wrestling always works.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so yeah, both guys just put on great performances. Lesnar, of course, leaves after he's pinned. And then Cena gets his celebration and so forth. And he goes to leave, but then he goes on to the middle of the steps. He lifts his hand to kind of soak in the cheers just a little bit. And then he calls for the mic and grabs it and then sits on the steps. And then he says that he thinks he'll be sent home for speaking his mind, but he thinks he's going home tonight anyway, so it doesn't matter. He says he's got no left arm, and he's tasting his own blood, and he's damn proud to do it in Chicago, Illinois. Kind of putting over the just, you know, sort of unbelievable to him, given the reaction that Chicago's given in the past that he was that he was cheered. He does a couple more things, and then his sort of famous last line is, "Thank you guys so much. Get home safe," which is which was kind of laughed at the time. And I remember, and this promo comes off very oddly, given that Cena, he was back on the show the next night, and everything was fine. So, I'm presuming that he believed that he had a serious injury. He also may have been a little bit loopy, you know, just from being hit really hard and so forth, and maybe, you know, was just, you know, a little bit out of it in that way as well, which is really the only explanation for this, because it didn't fit any other, you know, it didn't fit any story that they were telling. I would assume that you probably would agree, but do you have any particular take on it? I mean, what were you thinking when he gave that speech? In presuming you were still there and hadn't left yet, what were you thinking when he said that?
Yeah, I was heading out, and you know, I was hearing him as I was walking out. And I, you know, pulled back for a moment to listen to the promo. It was, you know, I remember, if I recall correctly, at the time there were already rumors that he was going in injured, and that he was like long overdue for some serious time off and might need to grab a surgery as well. So it made sense that, you know, that they were just going to write him off for a while. And at the time, I thought that was the reason the match ended the way it did. I thought the story coming out was going to be that Brock lost, but his loss was kind of a fluke, and that he just destroyed Cena so badly that Cena's gone for a while now, and Brock is going to do this reign of terror in his absence.
Yeah, which would have made a lot of sense, but it was definitely not what they did. They went back to Cena. He wrestled, I believe the next pay-per-view was him wrestling John Laurinaitis in the main event. So,
yep.
Which would not necessarily have been my decision, but
yeah.
But what can you do?
Yeah.
Anything else that you think of to discuss about the match or anything afterward before we get into the Twitter questions?
I don't think so. I kept a counter of Cena's entire offense during this match. It's pretty paltry. It's, you know, I knew that I could just list every bit of offense he got in during the entire course of the match, and it goes one elbow, one flurry of elbows to counter a waist lock, one shoulder block, one punch flurry, slam counter to the Kimura, punch with a chain, attitude adjustment. That's his entire offense for the whole match, which is, you know, almost squash match kind of proportions, if not for the signature move.
Yeah. I very much agreed. So let's see, for the questions, it's Tom Holzerman at T Holzerman. He's going by Dad News Barrett these days. Everyone with their funny Twitter names. Does the finish of the match really taint the body of work? You go first.
I'd say no, especially, you know, I just kind of explained where my head was kind of booking it out of that match. So I don't think the finish taints the body of the match, especially when there are logical bookings you could still do coming out of that finish.
Right. I agree. I mean, I think the finish of the match, you know, you could have done the match in a different way and had had Lesnar win at the end, and it would have been fine. But I feel like the way that Cena wins is perfect in keeping with the match, and it's a great match either way. I think you can argue, like, hey, was it a great idea to have Brock Lesnar lose his first match in? But maybe that's a different question. And I'm pretty sure we have that question somewhere further along the line, or if we don't, we'll definitely discuss that later. So we'll move on and get to that a bit later. Well, I guess the next question from Brandon Spears, at Brandon Spears. Would Lesnar have benefited from beating Cena clean, or was it done in a way that he didn't need to win? And I guess we kind of explained, like, that, you know, he came off perfectly strong and didn't necessarily need to win. But I think we both can probably agree that, like, as far as keeping Lesnar, like, as this strong monster who, and building to, like, building bigger business, that probably, you know, Lesnar probably losing the first time was not the smartest idea.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it undeniably took some of his thunder, although I think the structure of the match largely protected him from losing too much thunder.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he looks like an incredible monster, and anybody who watched the match would, you know, I remember, like, there were people immediately complaining about, oh, they buried Brock Lesnar. It's like, no, they did not bury Brock Lesnar. I mean, you know, you can argue, you know, pretty strongly that, yeah, he should have won the match, but as far as, like, you know, he was definitely not buried in any way at all. Yeah.
Yeah, not even close. I mean, I think, you know, if it did hurt him, it probably hurt him with the section of the audience that didn't see the match, who just heard, "Oh, Brock Lesnar lost."
Right. That's actually a pretty good point. I don't remember how well they played up the fact that, like, the way that Cena won, the way that he was so close to losing, and the way that it was basically, you know, a fluke that Cena won. And actually, we're recording this a few weeks before SummerSlam 2014, which is looking like it's going to be the big rematch between Brock and Cena. And it will be interesting to see what they remember about this match and how they... And if they go to any of that at all, or if they just kind of forget about it and play this up as just sort of, you know, if they don't play the first match into it at all, I could kind of see them going either way, to be honest.
Yeah, it's always hard to say with WWE. They have such a bizarre selective memory with their history, where they choose to remember certain things that may or may not make sense, and they choose to forget other things that may or may not make sense. There doesn't always seem to be a rhyme or reason for what they remember.
Yeah. Let's see. Brian Smith at Flying Brian. That's PHLYINBRYAN. Lesnar had the match won, but the ref was knocked out. Why was this not turned into a story, and should it have been? I think that probably would have been something that's good to play up in keeping up with Brock. Of course, you know, Brock didn't really come back till that summer, right? I mean, I think he injures Triple H maybe even the next night on Raw, or pretty soon after the show, he breaks Triple H's arm for the first time.
Yeah, that's what I recall, and they might have, like, had some implication of a suspension or something to explain him not being around after that.
Yeah, it was the April 30th Raw, so this was April 29th. So yeah, so and they say Lesnar had unreasonable contract demands. Of course, part of the story was that because Triple H was the COO, but he wasn't necessarily in charge of the day-to-day stuff. That was Laurinaitis, and Laurinaitis was the one who brought them in. It was one of those, going into tortured logic to figure out who was in charge of the show.
They're really getting into a black hole of authority figures at this point in 2012, as I recall.
Sure, yeah. So Lesnar was basically gone after the next night, and they've already kind of moved on to, like, hey, he broke Triple H's arm, so I guess they didn't really, like, have a lot of time to play that up like that. They already kind of moved on to the next thing.
And I think without Heyman there, that's a really hard case for Brock to make in promos. Like, if you've got Heyman as his mouthpiece, then you could kind of play that storyline well, but I don't think Brock is the kind of person who can whine about a technicality and come off as credible.
Yeah, that's a fairly good point, actually. That's a very good point, actually. So, I guess mostly it's because they moved on too quickly, but I think that's a That's a good point. I think Heyman bringing that up now actually would be probably pretty good. Like if somebody says, well, you know, Brock Lesnar lost to John Cena, you know, and Heyman can you know give you know the three things of you know of you would have been beaten if the officials hadn't stopped the match for the cut and he had you pinned and you know you beat him on a fluke using a chain to beat him, you know, what kind of hero are you kind of thing. Like, I think they could, that's the kind of thing they could take from this match and use in like the next match.
Yeah. I mean, this was last Monday when, Paul was talking about, what happened last time, my client wanted to beat somebody down. And I half thought they might go to the, you know, bloody images of this match, which would have been equally as effective footage as the footage of him destroying the Undertaker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think they would be making a mistake if they didn't play into at least some of I may be making a mistake if they didn't pull some of the stuff from this match. Because this match, I mean, it's pretty universally loved I think in even like people who, I think that goes beyond just the, you know, the obsessed smart fans. I think that, you know, I think there's kind of a universal feeling of looking at this match as something that's really special. And I think, and also if you can like play it up as, hey, the last time Lesnar and Cena wrestled, check it out on our network kind of thing, you know, that can be kind of an added hook for that. But
I think there's every reason for them to do it, but you know,
well, they right, I mean, they may just be like, oh, it's for the unified titles, and you know, and Brock Lesnar's the monster. They may not want you to remember that Lesnar lost is kind of the thing, you know. They may want you to they're not brazen enough to call Brock Lesnar undefeated, but you know they might be brazen enough to just be like, oh, you don't remember the time that Brock Lesnar lost to John Cena, you know, it was so long ago.
Yeah. I mean, there's all rumors of Vince McMahon being like, that happened 6 months ago. Who cares?
So right.
Something that happened 2 years ago. Who knows?
Sure. Exactly. Pro wrestling only at Pro Wrest Only. How viable would this style be in WWE main events long term? Any thoughts?
That's a tough one to answer. I mean, it's such a hard hitting, violent style. I don't think you could do it all the time. I mean, this isn't like a Japanese promotion, so I don't think you could get away with that flavor so much. But I think it has a place as like something you can keep in the toolkit and break out once in a while. And, you know, it's something I'd like to see them do a little more often. Too often their matches and main events feel a little too canned and predictable.
Yeah.
I like ones like this that have a real element of chaos and danger.
Yeah, I love whenever you can deviate from the formula in an interesting way. So I think that's good. But I do think just... Yeah, just how brutal it would be hard to have a match this effective without Brock being as brutal as he is in this match is a huge chunk of what makes it effective. And if he's not being that brutal, that changes the dynamic. So you probably, like you said, there's just too much risk for injury and so on and so forth. But I do think that, you can, it's kind of the thing, like, you know, like Money in the Bank matches or something that's a little bit more dangerous than or even maybe a lot more dangerous than the usual. It's something you can bring in once in a while. And honestly, there's a part of me that would have loved to have seen them kind of have the, take a risk and let, Lesnar beat Cena in 5 minutes and just destroy him and just like have finally, you know, just see him be overwhelmed and they have to stop, you know, just him be completely bloody and they can't stop it. And then it's over just like a regular UFC fight. And then eventually of course build to, Cena getting his revenge. But, I would love to see something like that. Just something where, like, it's not, you know, your typical, it doesn't have, not your typical 15 minutes. It ends way sooner than you think. It ends in a way different way than you think. I think that allows for bigger variety in future matches. It gives you kind of the idea that a match can end at a different point than you're used to.
Yeah, and I think that would have been a really compelling way to go if they had decided that they really wanted to get behind Punk as champion. Because at this time, Punk was kind of flying as the second main event kind of champion. You know, next month he plays second fiddle when he's wrestling Daniel Bryan while Cena faces Laurinaitis in the main event.
Sure.
But if you had done that where, you know, Cena loses in a matter of minutes, and then you set it up as like, well, Brock just destroyed Cena and now he wants the championship, you know, what chance does Punk have? And then if you have Punk beat the Monster, then that's just, you know, a huge boost to Punk, who is kind of just there at this time, which is a weird thing to say about the champion, but he was just kind of floating by.
Which is interesting because Punk was champion for, you know, the 400 whatever days, but like, for most of the year, like, the guy who was in the final match of the pay-per-views was John Cena. You know, it was just, it was kind of one of those, like, odd things where they just keep, you know, like, I mean, certainly Punk was important and the title was important. I'm not saying they were ignoring it, but, like, they definitely, you know, every show, basically, John Cena is standing at the end, you know, up until the heel turn, you know, that changed things a little bit, but for Punk. But yeah, it was kind of an odd, it was just kind of an odd thing that they did where, you know, and I guess, you know, to a certain extent, Cena is their bread and butter. So it kind of makes sense for him to be in the most important thing because he's the guy, you know, even more so than Punk, who's, you know, an attraction as well, but, you know, still not quite at the level of Cena, but, you know, at the same time, it's self-fulfilling if you're not really going to give Punk a shot to be, like, at the very top without Cena, you know, always being in the top thing. You know, how successful can he quite be? You know, it's sort of, it's double-edged sword, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, John Cena, he just has such gravity as the top guy in the company. He really is like the glass ceiling of the WWE, where it's like you can succeed to a point, but you can't succeed more than Cena. It just doesn't even seem possible.
Right, exactly, yeah.
So that's why I thought, you know, Cena possibly getting off the program after this events was such a strong possibility, because it seems like how can you even build another star while Cena's still around?
Yeah, it seemed like even if he'd taken a month off or something just to, like, okay, now he regroups and gets back into, yeah, I think there would have been some really benefit to that. I understand that they want him around to be, you know, to be the attraction, and that's important to them, and you know, they live in the real world where they have to worry about that kind of thing, and we live in the, you know, in the fantasy wrestling world where we have our ideals of what would be best for storytelling and so forth. And so, but yeah, it really does seem like they could have sold Brock's incredible vicious beating of Cena better, quite a bit better than they ended up doing, you know, quite frankly. So next, Star of Savage, at Star of Savage. Was Brock's return to Raw handled well? Would it have played better during WrestleMania itself? I don't think you could have done, I mean, you certainly couldn't have done it the same way with Cena, because that would have gotten in the way of Cena being forlorn after losing to The Rock, and would have lost, you know, The Rock's big moment. I mean, I guess there's you could have done kind of like a video package like they did for Goldberg at WrestleMania 19.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could have had him come out and just, I don't know, just give an F5 to somebody during the show and then done the same thing tomorrow. But I don't know, maybe it loses a little bit of its specialness during Raw. I wouldn't think so. I think it would still have been pretty big for him to come out and to to nail and to attack Cena the way that he did. I mean, it wasn't like pretty. I mean, there were chants of Lesnar before Lesnar's music hit, and so people knew he was coming, and that didn't make it play any worse. It probably made it play better, quite frankly. So I guess it could have. I don't know if it would have played better during WrestleMania, but I think you could have added a special thing to WrestleMania, which might have been a nice idea. I don't know. But I guess you also have to pay him an extra appearance to do that, so maybe you don't want to – you feel like you don't want to waste that on a show that's been bought by everybody in your audience. Not everybody, but, you know, that's, you know, a record-breaking pay-per-view because of the main event already that's been sold on that adding Lesnar to that is not as good of a use of resources as debuting him on the next Raw.
Yeah, I actually think you really couldn't ask for a better return for Lesnar because it was just a really cool moment the way it went down. It's one of the rare moments where I felt like social media really influenced the presentation of the product because there was a strong rumor that night that Lesnar was coming back, but nobody was really certain, and there was kind of conflicting reports, and he was, in fact, like, really late showing up. He had only just gotten in the building a few minutes prior to him walking out. And I remember, I think it was CM Punk sent out a tweet a few minutes before he actually walked out to confront Cena, and it was just like, look who I just saw in the back, and it was Lesnar entering the building. And you could almost feel, like, the crowd becoming aware of that tweet while Cena was stalling for time and giving his interview.
Sure.
There's just this rising energy all of a sudden in the crowd, and then Lesnar's music hit, and it just went wild. And it was also an event that kind of built this mythos of the Raw after WrestleMania, along with the yes chanting for Daniel Bryan, to the point where the Raw after WrestleMania is now like another big event in their calendar.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with that. Brian Schmidt at Schmanthony P. Can you think of another Cena match where he wrestles with as much believable humanity? I'll let you answer first.
This would have to be the number one example of that. Though I always kind of have a soft spot for how he played it in the match against Rob Van Dam at One Night Stand. I always liked the way he came out for that match and just kind of the walking into enemy territory acknowledgement that he had there. It wasn't as sympathetic, but it was another moment where I felt like I was seeing like real personality out of Cena.
Mm-hmm. You know, actually, one match that kind of stands out to me in terms of Cena kind of being sympathetic and is the WrestleMania 23 with a match with Shawn Michaels. Like, I feel like the way, like, Shawn shows kind of, like, uncommon viciousness during that match that he kind of rarely showed. And I feel like Cena, you know, is the way he sells for most of the match. He kind of drops a little bit at the end, which is kind of a shame. But he does seem sort of extra vulnerable during that match, which is kind of an odd way to play it, although I think it's a really great match. It kind of works despite being, you know, like sort of odd rules for those two to play. But that would kind of be the thing that I would think of offhand as closest. I mean, I guess there are some of those other ones where he's in that hostile territory where I guess another pretty good one would be the Umaga Royal Rumble 2007 match, the last man standing match where he has to like grab the rope to kind of choke him out. It is sort of a similar sense of like he's way overmatched and has to come up with like the, you know, he has to come up with like something to survive or he's not going to be able to.
Yeah, I think those are good examples. There are certainly cases where it goes wrong and Cena can't really get that across. I think his recent stuff with Bray Wyatt has struggled with that to a great extent.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I thought the WrestleMania match was okay, but yeah, it just didn't quite, it didn't quite work the way that you would kind of want it to on paper.
But yeah, that is kind of Cena at his best when he can actually project some vulnerability or threat, because it's really hard to get that across for Cena at this point.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's just such, you know, he's overcome the odds so many times that it's hard to still feel that to a certain extent, unless it's done really well. And sometimes it is, you know. But yeah, I would agree with that. Dylan Hales at Dylan Wilco. This match saw my dad jump out of his chair and scream, "Kick him in the balls," after Cena got busted open. Did either of you have a similar "is this real" reaction? We both kind of talked about it a little bit already. I mean, I didn't literally have a "is this real" reaction, but I definitely did have like a "wow, this is something very different, and this is like a real, like, you know, this is a real ass kicking going on here, you know, and like, how are they going to like put this together and convey this?" You know, I think is interesting, you know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not an "is this real" moment, but certainly an "is this really happening" moment.
Yes, that's a very good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just nobody in the house that night was prepared for the kind of violent spectacle that match was. And I mean, you could just feel everybody around you was taken aback. It was,
yeah,
it was just such an intense match. And, you know, something that, you know, had several jump up and be freaked out moments.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe one of the best, times I've ever felt that way would be Mick Foley being thrown off of the Hell in the Cell in 1998 by The Undertaker, which, of course, is a moment that has been just replayed so many times and has this, you know, this mythos around it that it's, I don't know if seeing it today with all the, even though obviously WWE has way toned down in the past, you know, 6 or so years, and that kind of thing isn't really common anymore. But you still have the ladder matches where there's a lot of the crazy bumps, and we've had so many big crazy bumps and falling off of high things by Shane McMahon and others, and that kind of thing, that maybe it's impossible to see that Hell in the Cell and have that kind of impact. But I remember seeing it for the first time and just feeling like, you know, oh my God, is this real? Is Mick Foley okay? Is you know, like, you know, what in the hell is going on here? And I don't think that this was, you know, like, this match wasn't quite like that, but it definitely had like a "what is going on here" kind of feel.
Yeah, I mean, Brock's offense was so legitimate seeming that I can remember people on Twitter like trying to make the case that he was some kind of rogue agent who was just going way too far with, you know, he basically had a great contract and was just content to just wail on, you know, real wrestlers, like, you know, and take real yes, liberties with their health and safety.
He's like, the Russian in Rocky IV. He's like Ivan Drago, you know, he doesn't care, you know, he's just going to murder John Cena in the ring. If he dies, he dies.
Yeah, I for one love Drago.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, we had the question earlier about whether or not Brock has a love of pro wrestling, and I think, you know, that was part of it too, was when people making this case that he was some kind of rogue agent, it was that he didn't also, like, he doesn't respect wrestling, so he's taking liberties with people. So, I mean, whether or not Brock loves the activity of pro wrestling, I think it's to his benefit to have people think that he doesn't have a lot of respect for it and that he's a legitimate, dangerous person out there.
Yeah. That was at Mo Pizza who asked that question. And yeah, I would say, like, I would completely echo that, but I would say, like, he performs well enough that, you know, I think he cares enough about it to perform, to be a good performer. So that's all that I really care about. Let's see. At Joey Splashwater wants to know, how do you feel about the ending today? It was terrible at the time, but I feel the face winning helps the historical legacy. I think the ending in this case just means the fact that Cena won instead of Lesnar winning, as opposed to how the finish came about.
You know, it's a little more of a discreet story on its own. So certainly if you're watching it context free in a vacuum, it's a bit more of a full meal now.
Yes.
So, you know, that always helps replay value.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I mean, at this point, I mean, my presumption as to why they made the choice for Cena is sort of a test to see if Lesnar would play ball, as a way to give Cena a big win after losing the match to The Rock. I kind of think those dueling purposes, and feeling like they could keep Lesnar strong enough by other means, that a loss here, given the way they did the loss, wouldn't hurt him to a large extent. And honestly, I think all those things are probably true. Like, I do think that probably, like, I think other examples of, like, perhaps not using Lesnar to his maximum capacity later, like doing three matches with Triple H instead of one or two, you know, for example, of just like maybe giving Lesnar a bigger variety of opponents, or maybe structuring his feuds a little differently, would have maximized that. That's kind of been a bigger problem, I think, for Lesnar in the long run, as opposed to the fact that he lost this first match. You know, in the larger scheme of things, I think Lesnar's pretty much been fine. I don't think it, like, it may have hurt him, but I certainly don't think it killed him as an attraction.
Yeah, and certainly every Lesnar loss seems stranger post-defeating the streak.
Yes.
Because after that point, you know, the fact that he ever lost a match previously seems strange, suddenly.
Right, yeah. If he's going to be safe for that, then, yeah, it would make... I mean, if he were undefeated going into this Cena match, I do think it would mean more. I don't know how much more... So that's kind of a good point. Especially after beating the Undertaker at WrestleMania, that would have added an extra, cachet maybe. And maybe he would, you know, be a bigger attraction than he is because of that. It's kind of hard to say. I guess we'll see how it performs and, you know, how the build goes and so forth. But, one last question from Corey Barker at Corey Barker. How do you guys feel about this? How do you guys feel about the Cena promo at the end and his bad year story in general? We've pretty much addressed the promo at the end, but how do you feel about his bad year story?
That story was always kind of a non-starter with me. I mean, sure, he loses to The Rock at WrestleMania, but I mean, there's plenty of success the rest of his year. So it's the only way it's really a bad year for Cena is if you just have ludicrously high expectations of success.
I mean, he wasn't champion all year. He lost to John Laurinaitis, although that wasn't really like – that didn't really have lasting consequences or anything. Other than that – I would pretty much have to agree. You know, I mean, he had the personal thing with his divorce, which played into that story as well. But yeah, he basically, you know, was in main events all year, won most of his matches, and was maybe 80% of the success he normally is. So,
yeah, exactly. Although I did find it hilarious that they like retconned his divorce to be a consequence of losing to The Rock. that just seems so out of bounds, even for a guy.
She expected a lot out of that match. Apparently, I mean, he sunk into such a deep depression. You know. Oh well, you know what? I take it all back, because I forgot that John Cena lost to Dolph Ziggler. So that in the ladder match. So Yeah, so I guess that would have been a terrible year.
Oh man, that he had like every he had everything working against him in that Ziggler match, as I recall. Just a hilarious comedy of reasons, excuses for him to have lost that match.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that match, so that'll be one on the plate. Now that I have the network, I've been rewatching some, watching a lot of pay-per-views that I've never seen before. So, and rewatching some as well, of course. So, I'll put that one on the list because that one sounds interesting in retrospect. So, yeah, I agree. The story, like, it's not completely out of bounds of reality, because they were able to kind of put a few things in there, but for the most part, it was not, if you think about it for more than like 20 seconds, you realize like, oh, that's pretty dumb.
Yeah, pretty much.
So let's see. Is there, that's all the Twitter questions that we have. Where can we find you on the internet?
I am at Lance Garrison, LanceGarrison. And I have a rarely updated blog that is the faceandperil.wordpress.com.
All right. Well, very good. Thank you, Lance, for being on the program. It was an excellent discussion. I think we touched on some interesting things about this match.
Yeah, I agree. It's an interesting case because it's already 2 years gone. And yet in some ways it feels like we're speaking about current events because it just ties into the current product in so many ways right now.
It does. You use the word product, but I forgive you for doing that, since I of course made the mistake earlier. So definitely. And I am excited to see how they pull off the second match, because it's hard to imagine them, because Lesnar's he's still certainly brutal, but he hasn't really wrestled that style in any of his other matches, and certainly not to that extreme. So now that Lesnar is kind of more a conventional pro wrestler again, with a few MMA things and a penchant for bringing stairs into the ring, we'll have to see how they work the second match, if they play the end of the first one at all, and so on and so forth. Because I think there's going to be some high expectations, and it'll be interesting to see if they can meet them.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be interesting to see if Lesnar goes back to a bit more of the ultra violence of this match. He certainly had to tone that down against a guy like The Undertaker, who's just not equipped to take that kind of punishment anymore.
Yeah, but Cena's aging too. I mean, he's in his late 30s. I mean, they may be interested in protecting him a little more than they were the first time. Or maybe Cena thinks he can take it, or maybe he can take it. You know, he's obviously a tough guy. So, it'll be really interesting to see how that's worked. Obviously, I'm sure it'll at the very least be a good match, but it certainly it wouldn't shock me if it fell below the expectations that were that are built because of how great the first match was. But what can you do? I'm sure at the very least it'll still be good and enjoyable. Hopefully, that's how I like my wrestling: good and enjoyable.
Yep, I couldn't agree more.
All right, very good. Well, thanks again, Lance, for being on the show. And listeners, thank you very much for sticking around for 200 episodes of Retrospective. I greatly appreciate feedback I get from people who enjoy the show and want to talk wrestling with me. You can do that most easily at Twitter, on Twitter, at Retrospective. I also have a Facebook page, also Google+, although I don't really check it, so I wouldn't recommend using the Google+ page. If you would like to celebrate the 200th episode, if you would like to leave a rating and review or review on iTunes or on Stitcher to let other people know how much you love listening to the show, or if you just like it okay. If you hate it even, I don't know why you would do that if you hate it, but sure, I want you to at least be honest. I don't want you to sugarcoat things just for me, just to make me happy. But Yeah, so that's about all. Thanks again for listening, and here's to 200 more.